Hello everyone, welcome to episode 2 of the Club Soda podcast. We're glad you're still here and listening after our epic first episode.
Hello, I'm Vinny and I'm here with Laura recording. Just a quick heads up and some technicality business. For those of you that want this to appear on Acast and iTunes, we totally understand and it will, but you have to get a couple of episodes in the bag and then wait for the overlords at Apple to let that happen.
So you have to prove to them that you want us to stay.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh no, I shouldn't tell people that.
It's giving me a complex. It reminds me of childhood.
Oh dear. That's a whole nother podcast, by the way, guys, not this one.
This is the podcast for everything mindful drinking. If you missed episode 1, you can find it at joinclubsoda.co.uk. My name's Vinny and Laura is the founder, one of the three founders of Club Soda. And as always, we will start with the up-and-coming events. Coming up later in the podcast, though, I should mention that we've got some top tips for New Year. We've got the news and a couple of interviews.
What kind of... Well, we've got an interview with Club Soda member Ruth. She gave up just before Christmas. Now, there's a time of year to start your alcohol-free journey. We've got some interviews with some drinks about why you should be drinking them at New Year. And then I'll be sharing some news from the things that I've been doing over the last month with Club Soda.
Oh, excellent stuff. Well, then we shall begin with the events coming up this December 2019.
Club Soda events.
For those of you who have gone to joinclubsoda.com/events, you will see that there's lots more up there these days. And that's because we've given access to other people who run sober events to put their events up, which includes a whole load in Australia, in Brisbane and so on. So look out for Untoxicated events in Australia, with the first one in Brisbane on December the 14th. Then Sober Dave is running his Christmas party on December the 15th. We've got our regular events coming up, but the big one that will be really interesting to you is on the 28th of December. We've got a between Christmas and New Year meetup, which has always been really popular. We're holding that in Covent Garden in Square Root's new bar, which is in this lovely new covered food market. So you'll be able to pick up loads of lovely food, get some great drinks, but more importantly is we will have copies of our new book there, and some of the people who've taken part in that book, some of the case studies, will be there. They will sign your book for you, sign your bra and your bosom or whatever other part of you. It's like a mini Club Soda celebrity event on the 28th of December. We're really gearing up for the big one, which is the festival on the 18th and 19th of January in the Truman Brewery, which is going to be amazing. And I will tell you a little bit more about the speakers for that later on in the show. And then there's the lunch in Ryslip in January on January the 4th.
For more information, go where?
To joinclubsoda.com/events.
Thank you.
Next, we've got an interview with Club Soda member Ruth. She gave up drinking before Christmas, which is a really bold and brave time to do it. I caught up with her over breakfast.
What did you eat?
I think we might have had eggs and maybe some Marmite.
We've just got all these new Australians and you're going to upset them with Marmite.
No, I'm afraid we are a Marmite-only show. we are not allowed any imposters. If anybody needs to understand why, they only need to go on my own personal Facebook and see my love affair with Marmite.
Okay.
In fact, I will divulge that I have a little swim club called the Poached Egg and Marmite Swim Club, and Ruth is one of our members.
Does that mean you go swimming in a large vat of Marmite?
No, we go swimming in a swimming pool.
Okay.
And then we have poached eggs and Marmite afterwards.
That's the name of your swim club?
Yeah, and it's a great swim club because basically we meet before work and we swim and have breakfast and we all sit there going, isn't it amazing, once you're sober, you can like do a whole socialising before you've even gone to work? That's basically how that works.
Yeah, you might see a theme in this podcast that when you give up booze, you tend to have a bigger, broader and more early morning social life.
Which is why you don't get up to quite late. Is that right, Vinny?
Let's pretend I'm still on Sober October and now listen to Ruth.
Member interview.
So I'm here with Ruth Cooper-Dixon. We're having coffee and breakfast. And I'm going to interview her this morning about why she gave up drinking only 6 weeks before Christmas and how she found that and what her top tips may be for you. So Ruth, it was a really weird time to give up. Surely you thought, well, I'll wait till I get Christmas out of the way and then I'll give up drinking. Why did you decide to give up just before the hardest time of year to do that?
Well, I think for me, there'd always been a reason not to give up drinking. So the year before I was 40 and I was thinking, oh, I'll give up drinking, but then it was my 40th birthday party. There's always been something, and I think you can always have an event or Christmas being a big one, or a birthday, or a holiday, or a reason why you shouldn't give up drinking and weight. And it just came on the back of two really big actual work nights out, they were, which is often where perhaps more of my social drinking was happening anyway, more so, you know, at weekends. It was more in the weeks, and it was two really big work events, which actually I had the most horrific hangovers. And remember waking up on that Thursday morning and just thinking, I'm not doing this anymore. Or Friday morning, actually, it was Friday morning, so it was Wednesday night or Thursday night, and I just thought, that's it. And the way for me to make myself accountable, because I was feeling that awful and that shit, was that I actually did on my Instagram story, I'm giving up alcohol today for a year. That's it, done. And that was, I didn't really anticipate the reaction to that, because that was me feeling extremely hungover, extremely fragile physically and mentally, and just saying that, and then the amount of people that contacted me that day or over that weekend to say, I can't believe you're stopping drinking, why are you stopping drinking now before Christmas, can't you wait until January, you know, start the new year's resolutions. But I think at that point I realized that if I just didn't stop and do it right there and then, there'll be another reason why I shouldn't. So that was kind of why I decided to do that.
That's cool. I did it 2 weeks before my birthday, and I think there was definitely something of, actually, you need to decide that it's now or never.
Yeah.
And that you use those things as an excuse all the time.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if you want to do something nice for yourself at Christmas or your birthday, then actually not drinking is that nice thing.
Yeah.
Here you are, several weeks before Christmas, people not believing you've done this. How did you get through that Christmas season? How did you deal with parties? How did you deal with family? How did you deal with all those friends who wanted you to go out and celebrate Christmas, you know, drink Bucks Fizz in the morning, all of those things that we used to use as excuses to drink more?
So I had a couple of events, because obviously it was running up to Christmas, so I had a couple of events, like black tie parties and a weekend away, and immediately I sent a message that weekend to my friends who I was going to be staying with, and I was actually going to Chicago for New Year's Eve for a holiday for a week. So I contacted that friend as well and said, look, I've decided to give up drinking for 12 months and I'm just letting you know now, ahead of me coming, and I don't want to make this a big deal, but I just felt I wanted to let you know. And most of my friends were like, it doesn't matter, like, it's okay, it's fine, don't be silly, do what you do what you want to do. There were some people who were very, well, you're going to be you're not going to be fun, or can't you wait until the new year, or we've always done this together. And that was really hard for me to stick to my conviction and just believe that it was the right thing to do. And know that actually, which has taken a bit of time in realising this, but it was actually more about them than it was about me, about their feelings towards drinking and perhaps their own perception of how much they drank and why they need alcohol for a night out or for a weekend or whatever. Family was a bit different, because I come from a family where, you know, drinking is part of our culture, and it's my mum's birthday on Christmas Day, and I've always bought her a bottle of champagne, so we've always had this routine for years, for 20 something years. So I think they were supportive. In the early days they probably didn't realise how much this meant to me, but they still went along with it, I guess, and I became the designated taxi driver over Christmas, which was fine with me. So that was quite hard, I think, that first Christmas. But actually, what I loved about it was that I went out on Christmas Day to stay with friends, and I could drive back home on the Boxing Day feeling fresh, and I was up and about, and I was doing things. I've never had that all ever at Christmas. Like Christmas Day, waking up hangover free, and Boxing Day, getting up and going for a run. I mean, that was amazing. So I wouldn't change that now. And now it's so different. But I think that was a really hard period for people to... I think it's just hard for other people as well to understand. So you need to be... I guess it's having strength in what you believe in.
So, Ruth, you sound like you were just perfect from the beginning and that you didn't need to plan anything and it was all easy. Was it that easy?
No, not at all. Christmas, I made sure that I did have non-alcoholic beers and some alternatives. So that was good. So I had to kind of plan and think that ahead. And then I did slip into this whole Red Bull phase. So I found that actually I'm not going to drink. I'm going to drink Red Bull, which is probably not as a good alternative. So that was evident in the... I went to a black tie do a couple of weeks after I stopped drinking. And I was drinking Red Bull. And throughout the night, I was there on my own with a bunch of people I didn't know on a table. And the guy was passing around wine. And he said, oh, would you like some wine? And I said, I'm not drinking. And he says, oh, I thought you were really drunk. So that was probably the point when I thought I'd best lay off the Red Bull. And then New Year's Eve, I was in Chicago. We had tickets to a hotel, like a party celebration, which was an all-you-can-drink bar, all-inclusive bar. And I was on the Red Bull then, actually, but probably not as much. I was a bit more conscious of that. But it was just really interesting because I think I just realised at that point that you start to see people for who they really are. So the first hour or so is really fun and you're having a bit of a dance and just chatting to people. And then the more and more that people are drinking, especially at an all-inclusive event, the conversation and how people are, and I just was thinking, what am I doing here? And I think all of that was really hard, actually, because you start to realise I'd much rather be at home in bed now and sat on the couch or having a chat with somebody, or I don't know. I just think it can be straightforward, but I think if alcohol was a big part of your life before, then there'll definitely be those points when you kind of go, I feel like I'm missing out potentially, or I feel like I'm not part of this club anymore, or I feel like I'm boring. There was another point when I just sort of thought, actually, I don't want to be out all of the time. Like what you thought was enjoyable, it gets to a point where actually I'd rather just go home at a certain point and not be out till 2-3 in the morning. So
do you think that makes you more boring now, or how has that changed for you? Because you're now 12 months in, so are you going back? And how do you feel socialising now? Because you did some really hardcore socialising sober right at the start. And I think it does take a little while to find your feet. So have you found your feet?
So I was at a work event in February and I really was craving a glass of red wine. And it was a free wine, whatever. And I realised that actually it wasn't about the fact I really wanted or fancied a glass of red wine. It was because I was feeling really exhausted and tired and emotional and drained. And I think what I've really learned in the last 12 months is the difference between enjoying a glass of fizz and thinking, oh, I'm on a flight and I've got a nice glass of wine, or is it because I'm craving it because I'm exhausted or stressed out, or I feel like I need to have it to fit in. And I think I've really learned the difference between those two this year. I don't want to start drinking again. I'm really happy now. I found my feet. I've never been so authentic in myself and so genuine. And of course, not every day is amazing, but I think I've gained far more by giving up alcohol than actually sticking with it. And not only physically, the sleep, my skin, how I feel in myself. Mentally, I've only had 3 panic attacks since I've given up alcohol. And with someone with panic disorder, that's phenomenal. And I think that's a big contributor to that and my anxiety. And I just find I get loads of shit done now.
Good to hear Ruth there, a member of Club Soda. How do you actually become a member of Club Soda?
Well, it's free to join. Just go to our website, joinclubsoda.com, and you'll get all the details you need to sign up to our email list or join our community.
Club Soda, top tips.
it's coming to that time of year when things are getting a bit tricky.
So last episode, we talked about tips to get through Christmas, and I appreciate that Christmas is still on the agenda and it's still there, but some of you may be having some thoughts about New Year and the fact that a lot of people will say to you, oh, go on, it is New Year, why don't you have a drink? And for some people, New Year's Day may be the starting point for their journey to change their drinking. So I wanted to cover a little bit about tackling New Year, some top tips for doing that, and whether you should drink or not, regardless of whether you've started your goal or not.
Okay.
So so the best way to talk about this is I'm really excited now that my New Year's resolution doesn't include changing my drinking. It was my New Year's resolution for about 20 years. And so there is something quite exciting about, you know, doing what Ruth did actually and giving up before Christmas and having, you know, a good, 90 days in the bank before you even get to New Year. Mm. Now, for those of you who aren't drinking at New Year, how do you get through it? Well,
Can I just quickly ask, is Dry Jan more popular than Sober October for most people?
Yes, for a number of reasons. One is that we generally have all overindulged in December. So January becomes that time where you realise you need to take a break. We're all a lot poorer. We've spent all of our money and there's not a paycheck coming for a while. And also we all tend to have health goals. And therefore, even if you're on a diet or planning to run a marathon, the chances are your goal will involve cutting down drinking. And so taking a month off is a good start.
Mm.
So generally, we're more attuned to health goals in the new year. So New Year's Eve, I highly recommend that whether you're moderating or going alcohol-free, that you plan ahead. It's the most boring thing that I ever tell people, but it's really true. Where are you going? Who are you going with? What are you going to drink? If you're going to a restaurant or a party, you know, can you take your own drink? Can you ask them to pay corkage so you can bring your own alcohol-free fizz? Can you ask them to get something in for you? What do they serve? Actually phone up and ask and say, you know, what have you got behind the bar so I know what to ask for when I come in? What have you got that's special for people not drinking to toast the new year? Put those venues under a bit of pressure.
Do you think, I'd like to think that works, the occasional phone call makes
absolutely
the management
it does.
Think, well, hang on a minute, what have we got other than orange juice? Perhaps we should do something.
Yeah, here. And we've got lots of examples of members who have done that. So do phone in advance, but it also helps to know what it is that you're going to drink. So if anyone puts you under pressure and says, oh, go on, it's New Year, you go, no, actually, I'm really looking forward to having all the dessert, which is what I will be doing, and this drink at New Year's Eve. And actually, you know, the way that I want to celebrate is to do something nice for myself. And doing something nice for myself isn't drinking alcohol anymore. It's something different. Mm. And I think that's quite important. You can reframe celebration in your mind. If you think about it, in Britain, we always think of celebration as being about getting drunk. Hey, we're celebrating. Get out the champagne, get out the fizz. But you could say, well, actually, I'm celebrating the new year and I'm going to see it in by going to a spa, or I'm going to see it in by, you know, sitting with some hot chocolate on top of a hill and watching the fireworks. I'm going to celebrate it by going to something that's a murder mystery party, which is more of an event rather than just a good old booze fest. You can reframe it, because it's a bit like birthdays for me. Why would I want to do something that does damage to myself at a time when I'm celebrating? I want to do things that make me feel good and feel happy, and that I'll still feel happy about the following day. Mm. So do treat yourself with consent. And think about what you'd like to do. And, you know, you don't have to go to a party just because you've been invited. You could decide to go home and go to bed early, which I've done a few times as well. It's quite nice. Wake up New Year's Day, do something really nice early the following morning. Do what's right for you. Do what makes you feel happy. Do what makes you feel like you're doing something special for you. This is your new year after all. You know, it doesn't have to be celebrated with hundreds of other people with gallons of alcohol. So make sure you take control of the situation. I highly recommend that if you're moderating, start off your evening alcohol free so you can last the distance, and make sure you eat food. Eating is not cheating, by the way. It really does help. It makes you less likely to want to drink more, not just because everyone talks about it soaking up the alcohol, but that's not the point. You often drink when you're hungry. And so if you're not hungry, you're less likely to drink in large quantities.
So it's a double whammy, because your tolerance is lower and you're drinking more.
And then take some good alcohol-free drinks to start off the evening. And you may find that halfway through the evening, actually, you don't need to or want to drink. I mean, this is the benefit for moderators, which is that you should be able to pick and choose. And if you start off your evening in a couple of drinks behind everyone else, you get to assess the situation about whether it's one that you want to be at. And then finally, make sure you've got that brilliant drink. Make sure you toast along with everyone else. You might want to find ways to do that online. wine if you're at home, you know, with other Club Soda members toasting the new year. But then also think about your resolutions, which is something we'll come on to a little bit later.
So top tips for your New Year's shenanigans and moving into January. Now, it's probably a lot easier in the depths of January when there's not many parties to go to and all the rest of it. Can I ask one question?
Have you got any... You should never ask a question if that anyone could answer no to.
If you're having a party and you're not drinking and everyone else is drinking and you've done everything you've just said and it's gone really well, you've been really enjoying your own drink that you've brought and people are starting to get a little bit pissed, a little bit rowdy, and you want to make an exit. How do you do that? Do you just slide off, or do you announce
I always suggest you do an Irish goodbye at a party, which is that you say goodbye to the host when you arrive. If I don't see you later and I disappear, I just want to thank you for inviting me. It's a really lovely evening. Isn't that great? Because the minute you start telling people you're going, stay for one more.
Exactly.
I mean, the other thing is also not to be the designated driver, because you end up having to stay as long as the drunkest person wants to stay. Don't lock yourself in to anything. Make sure that you go when you want to go. And if that's at 5 past midnight after the toast has been done, that's absolutely fine. But yeah, definitely don't feel you have to say goodbye. Most people won't remember. And you can also say thank you the following day, which is far nicer than a goodbye on a drunken evening. Send people a postcard with a photo from the party going, thanks for inviting me. I had a wonderful evening. I can tell you, they will remember that postcard. They probably won't remember that you were there for half the evening.
Meet the brand creators.
I caught up with three of our favourite drinks at an event recently, and I asked them why their drink is so good and why you would want to drink it at New Year.
My name is Ryan Finch. I'm the UK brand ambassador for Liars, and we're going to make a non-alcoholic espresso martini today with our range.
And how do you make an alcohol-free espresso martini? Isn't it normally quite powerful stuff?
Absolutely. So the keys lie in the base spirit, usually. Obviously, we're using a non-alcoholic base spirit. And also in the coffee and the syrup we use. So today we're using Liars coffee liqueur, or coffee originale, and Liars white cane spirit. And the mix of these, so the coffee liqueur has hints of blueberry, hints of fig, massive hits, extracts of coffee and espresso. And the white cane uses toasted oak, marzipan, hints of like caramel in there as well, which is gonna play off the nuances in the coffee.
So let's see some mixing.
So we're going to take 45 millilitres of our coffee originale and back that up with 15 millilitres of the white cane spirit.
15 or 50?
15. And obviously in a normal espresso martini, you've got a vodka base. We're using that white cane just to provide a little bit of a, not a neutral base, but a nice sugar cane spirit as a background. And yeah, you should get nice nice oakiness come through with the coffee.
Do you actually shake it?
We do shake it indeed. So what we do is, because with non-alcoholic spirits, we have a tendency to use a water-based spirit. So we have to be very clever about how we make things. So we dry shake ours first, gets our espresso nice and foamy. And then we do what I like to call a daiquiri shake, which is just 3 to 4 seconds, real hard, real fast, chills it perfectly and creates a perfect drink every time.
And tell me about the coffee that goes into a espresso martini.
So coffee-wise, we're using cold brew. We like to use nitro cold brew as well.
And you can buy that, right?
You can buy that in pretty much any supermarket now. Sainsbury's has a nice range, Tesco's has a nice range. I like to work with brands like Union, because they make single origin cold brew coffees, which are just super high quality. And your espresso martini is only as good as your coffee.
And when you say a dry shake, you mean without all the ice cubes in?
Yes, exactly. So we're going to shake it first without the ice. All that is going to activate the coffee, essentially, and get that nice and foamy.
Doesn't sound the same without the ice.
It doesn't, does it? It's not quite as exciting, but we're going to do it with some ice in a minute.
Now we get the ice.
3-4 seconds. Real hard, real fast. My tip as well is to always have a fine strainer or a tea strainer handy. You don't want little bits of floating ice on the foam.
And then what's this that you're shaving over the top?
We're going to put some grated chocolate on top there. Chocolate and coffee, best friends, of course. That's going to give a little bit of sweetness.
You can't just like put a lump of chocolate on the top. That's what I'd go for.
I mean, I've seen people put marshmallows on top with blunt of chocolate, so...
Do we have someone who wants to try it?
Me.
We have a customer. This is Rob. Rob's going to try it.
Delicious.
That'll keep you awake all afternoon. Hey, would it be a great New Year drink?
So New Year's Eve is technically a very late night, usually. So that little bit ahead of espresso is going to keep you going, keep you partying throughout the night. I also like to think of espresso martinis as a nice celebration drink. You know, when you're out for parties, you know, birthdays, even weddings, espresso martinis are normally quite a big part of that now as the world's most popular cocktail. So it's always nice to go into the new year in a bit of style.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm here with some of my favourite girls. Actually, you're the only girls, I think, apart from Nirvana, who are making alcohol-free beer. Tell me, guys, tell me, both of you, introduce yourselves and tell me why you made alcohol-free beer.
Okay, so I'm Joelle Drummond.
And I'm Sarah McNina.
And we had the idea for Drop Bear about a year ago now, when Sarah stopped drinking. So would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, basically I stopped drinking and found that there wasn't really anything that was too exciting for me. I like my craft beer, and I didn't want to just have a Beck's Blue all the time. It's great, but you know, sometimes you want something different. So we thought, you know what, we'll give it a go. We'll do it ourselves. So we bought a saucepan from Wilko's, and then it kind of escalated.
Yeah, and we wanted a really interesting brand as well. You know, we're quite weird, we have a lot of energy, and in craft beer you tend to get all the weird and wonderful elements of people, so we wanted that in the alcohol-free scene too.
So why is it called Drop Bear Beer?
Well, I don't know if you've been to Australia, but I'm from Australia, and we have drop bears. So they're these really, really scary koalas, and basically they drop on you from the trees. So you just got to watch out. So I've told Joe all about them, and it's just part of our identity as a Welsh Australian company. We wanted to have something that can kind of combine both of us into one, because we're really transparent. It's us behind the brand. We don't hide behind the logo.
And you're scary bears. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yes, we are. We're cute, but we're feisty. So don't mess with us.
We're not as innocent as we look.
No, we're not.
No. So you've got four different types of beer. But there's one that I'm quite excited about that I think would be great for people at New Year. Tell us about that.
So we have the Bonfire Stout, which is coming out in the next week. So I think that would be great to kick off the new year. It's fiery, it's smoky, it's roasted, it's a proper adult drink. It's something we're really excited about.
Yeah, it's inspired by the traditional Irish stout, so it's nice and dry. Really dark. It's not here to mess about. No.
And everyone in Wales should be drinking it, right, this new year?
You're not Welsh if you're not drinking it. That's all I'm saying.
And finally, where can people buy it from?
So they can buy it from Dry Drinker online. And if you have a look on our website, we've got a full list of all of our stockists.
And you can use your Club Soda VIP discount code as well.
Woohoo! Yay! Even better.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, bye.
Avnish, you've got six very beautiful bottles here. Tell me what's in them.
So we have a very eclectic, elegant range of six alcohol-free cocktails, ranging from a gin and tonic, a drink that's inspired by a mojito. We have two other rum-based drinks, the Old Cuban, which is a very niche spice rum and prosecco flavor. And then we have a traditional spice rum and cola. To round off our range, we have a fiery Moscow Mule, which is vodka essence with a very fiery ginger beer. And then we have one of our more popular drinks, which is the Bellini. That's a white peach puree with Prosecco notes and some bitters to round off the complexity.
Now, I'm looking for drinks that I think will be awesome for sort of Christmas and New Year. So we're going to first of all try the Old Cuban, because you reckon that's a great one for Christmas. Why is it a great one for Christmas?
So the Old Cuban is based off of a mojito. It's a more sophisticated version of a mojito. It has a spice rum base with Prosecco, as well as a touch of mint, lime, and a bit of cardamom to add to the complexity. When people do drink this, you get the flavors of nutmeg and cinnamon and cardamom and clove. People say it reminds them of Christmas in a bottle.
Oh, it does. It's got a lovely sort of slightly nutmeggy and citrusy nose that goes, ooh, nice Christmas day.
I didn't really like that. This is how these interviews are done. Just
you know, we don't have a way of doing
like a
interviews.
Nice booth, a radio booth or something.
No, you're gonna. We like to be out in the field, Avnish. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. Very
okay.
Nice and balanced. Okay. So Bellini.
So
let's
try the Bellini. So how would you serve? First of all, how would you serve your Old Cuban?
So the Old Cuban will be served in a traditional crystal glass what you would find that you'd serve an old-fashioned in. So something that you sip slowly beside the fire while you're reading the newspaper or unwrapping those Christmas presents.
I like anything in front of a fire, I think. And then, so your Bellini, how would you serve that?
So a Bellini would traditionally be served in a champagne flute, and these are really ideal for bottomless brunches, but also good for ringing in the new year. This Bellini is the white peach puree with the Prosecco and a few bitters that give it a bit more complexity.
Oh, I can smell that peach. It really hits you beautifully on the nose, just like a Bellini should. Oh, yeah, definitely. Putting that in a champagne glass, that will make your new year. So, Avnish, where can we buy these?
So right now you can find these on our website, sipling.com. But we will be launching in other online retailers and Amazon as well. So yeah, you can follow us on Instagram, siblingbeverageco.com. Join our mailing list on our site, sipling.com. And we will be at the Mindful Drinking Festival in January. So stop by our booth.
So where can you get these drinks? Well, firstly, you can find them all on clubsodaguide.com, and it will tell you where you can buy them online or in the supermarkets. So you need to know that Liars is available on Amazon across the world, actually, in Australia and America. And you can also buy it on Amazon in the UK, but it's about to go into Sainsbury's and Tesco's for the new year. So look out for that. Drop Bear beer you can buy from Wise Bartender and Dry Drinker. Don't forget to use the Club Soda VIP code for a small discount. And then finally, you can buy Sipling on their website, which is sipling.com. And of course, they will all be at the festival.
And when's that festival?
Oh, it's the 18th and 19th of January at the Truman Brewery. Look at mindfuldrinkingfestival.com.
The Truman Brewery halfway down Brick Lane?
Yeah, in that trendy place. It's free. Just turn up.
I can just
apart from you, Vinny. We're not letting you turn up. You're banned.
Club Soda News.
So what have I been doing over the last month for you guys? Well, first of all, I was down in Exeter. I did a couple of How to Change Your Drinking workshops at a celebration in Exeter to actually celebrate the end of a big project there called Drinkwise Age Well, which is a lottery funded project to help older people change their drinking habits. But actually from the new year, we'll be in that area doing workshops and events and look out for us at Exeter Pride, which I'm quite excited about. Then we were at the Institute of Licensing. Now, what's all that about, you may ask? Well, the Institute of Licensing is a big network of all of the licensing officers in every council, those people who give licenses to pubs and bars and restaurants. We went to do an event with them to try and highlight the different types of venues there are and what drinks they have. We wanted to challenge their perceptions of what the alcohol-free range in different places were. So we played a game of pin the drink on the venue, and we tried to get them to guess the drink that we gave them to try. So we had alcohol-free gin, we had Strike, we had Adnams wine, we had Nicks and Kicks soda for them all to try.
And did they know any of this was non-alcoholic?
They knew it was all non-alcoholic, but we asked them to guess whether this drink belonged to a high-end chicken shop, a high-end Asian restaurant, in a cocktail bar or in a local pub. And so you can hear some of their responses here now.
So we're paying pin the drink on the venue. We've got a range of alcohol-free drinks here, and you need to decide which type of venue they belong to. Where do you think the Old Moot should go? Which type of pub? A countryside brewery, high-end Asian restaurant, a typical local pub, or a stylish chain cocktail bar?
Countryside brewery-owned pub or a typical local one.
Oh, nice. Do you want to go and stick it on?
Yeah.
What type of venue do you think the gin and tonic is sold by?
Cocktail bar.
Stick it on.
And then finally, in my bid to get pubs and bars to have a little bit more thought about what you want to drink, I did an event at Drink Tank, which is an industry event designed to share the new things that are happening in the drinks world. And I chaired a panel which had on it Fugitive Motel, which is one of our favourite pubs in Bethnal Green, which has a massive range of low and no alcohol drinks, 16 alcohol-free beers and 9 kombuchas. They've really gone to town on creating an environment that is for everybody and not just about the alcohol. They were on that panel, as was our lovely Camille from La Maison Wellness and somebody from Seedlip. And you can hear a little snip of our discussion here now.
If you were to talk to a new venue now, how would you explain to them why they should begin to look at their new low and no, how they should look at their low and no offer? Why should they even bother? Do you want to start, Dan, because you've got a low offer, which is really interesting. So why should venues even bother?
I think our man at the Portland Group showed in them figures that people are changing. It is a generational shift. I don't think it is a trend anymore. I think because there's more information about alcohol consumption and about alcohol in general, then I always say we're kind of a little, the drinks industry especially is usually about 5-10 years behind the chefing world and the food world. Like you go to a food shop now and you know everything that's in the food. Everyone wants to know what's in their food. Now people want to know what's in their drinks and how strong their drinks are. And it was one of the main reasons why I did the Unit One menu was low end knows great and it's a fantastic movement. We wanted to try to give it some actual structure by making it so that people can count and understand what they're consuming. So I definitely think every venue now should look at it. I don't think we should ignore it anymore.
I mean, it's interesting you do that comparison with food, because I see it as just another dietary preference, not an unusual behaviour, whereas some pubs still go, oh, that's strange, whereas actually that's not the case. It's a dietary preference. You stick it on your dietary requirements at events and things like that.
Club Soda events.
At the festival, as well as having over 60 drinks brands, we have an amazing schedule of motivational speakers and panels to get your dry January off to a great start. So what can you expect? Well, we have the Love Sober podcast crew doing a great panel on parenting sober. Glad they're doing that, because that's not my expertise at all. Drew and I will be taking extracts from the book and talking to you about how to be a mindful drinker. Then we've got Clemmie Telford, who some of you may have seen on Instagram talking about changing her drinking, and I'll be interviewing her about what she's got planned for the new year. Simon Chappell, who some of you may know from Annie Grace's This Naked Mind, will be talking about alcohol and anxiety. Now, I've seen his talk before and it is really inspiring. Then we'll have a panel about getting out of your comfort zone and how you can look at changing your drinking to do anything from improving your athletic performance all the way through to creating the life that you want. And we'll have some panels about socialising alcohol-free. And then on the Sunday, we'll have some panels about socialising sober successfully, about self-care. And also, there will be I Love Lucid, which do sober holidays, doing a panel about how to holiday sober. And then finally, the Young and Sober Instagrammers. Yes, they are back this year, the whole group of them, from Scott to Millie, who runs Sober Girl Society. They will be doing a panel discussion around being younger and changing their drinking habits. Next, we have an interview with Big Drop Beer. They'll be at the festival, and you may know that they're one of the big alcohol-free beer producers. Anya and Jesse, our drink reviewer and guide manager, went along to a beer and food tasting that they did recently. So you'll hear an interview with Rob, their founder, but also a great piece from Melissa Cole, who's one of the country's top beer writers, telling you how you compare your alcohol-free beer with food this Christmas.
So, Rob, do you want to tell us a bit about why we're here today?
Yeah, absolutely. So Big Drop Brewing, as you hopefully know, was created to provide more choice for beer drinkers rather than mass-produced lagers when you go into pubs and restaurants. And the collaboration set that we've created here is really intended to expand that choice even more. So we've created some slightly crazy beers with some brilliant breweries from around the country, some friends of ours, Fine Ales, Four Pure, Harbour and Salt. So we've got four brilliant different styles of beer, all intended to try and please every beer drinker.
And so you've done these collaborations with breweries who predominantly brew alcoholic beer. What was that like working with those guys?
I think they were all really excited to take up the challenge. It's not easy to brew great tasting alcohol-free beer. It genuinely is really difficult. The process is slightly different, but we do manage to produce a full range of different styles of beer. But yeah, all the breweries that we worked with were genuinely excited at the challenge and really keen to take it up, and they've done really well, all of them.
Melissa, can you tell us about your involvement in the event and how you've worked on these food pairings?
Yeah, sure. So actually, my involvement started at the point of inception of the project. So it was using my connections within the brewing industry to bring some of these people to, you know, bring these people down here together. We had a hilarious trial brew day the day after Great British Beer Festival Trade Day, which I thought was very brave. I have never seen brewers so happy to see non-alcoholic beer in my life as I have that day. I was busy cooking a full English on a barbecue while they were doing all this stuff. But also we talked about the style. So between myself and Johnny, who's the brewer for Big Drop, is what we did was we came up with styles that were also representative of what you'd expect from the breweries as well. It was a genuine collaborative idea, because if you suddenly say, well, we're collaborating with so-and-so, but it's going to be so far out of what they're known for, you both kind of lose your way a little bit. And the idea is to help that exchange of expertise. So the expertise of taste and flavour of a certain style of beer meets the expertise of how to create a Nolo, me sitting somewhere in the middle throwing more expensive ingredients in the mix. That was that. And then obviously when we wanted to make a big deal about this, because we do believe it is a world first. As far as I'm aware, there is nowhere else in the world that has produced a four-pack collaboration set like this for Nolos. Obviously, other people have done it for full-blooded beers, but not for Nolos. And I just felt like it was, you know, we all discussed it was something we wanted to make a fuss about. So the guys have a connection with Caravan, and so we thought, you know, that would be really good fun. And you can just do little light bites. Shane, the chef, has been wonderful here. So we came up with these ideas, and it's all just about, you know, we've got some contrasting ones in a black IPA with some sweet pancakes and fruit. We've got some, again, sort of a really bright, fresh mixture with some jalapeno cornbread and a raspberry gosa, and also matched all the core range to it as well, so that people understand that this isn't just a kind of a faddy one-off thing. You can do this with the basic core range as well. So it's just about showing people the versatility of this kind of thing, and also, you know, it just seems funny to me to drink beer at breakfast, so...
And with kind of the writing that you've done and the events that you've hosted over the years, you've done a lot to encourage people to think about food and beer pairing in the way that they, you know, the attention that they give to food and wine pairing. And today, obviously, we're doing that with No and Low. What do you think that we can do as an industry to encourage people, I think particularly fine dining, to think more about meeting their non-drinking customers with a good drinks pairing?
Fine dining's always going to be that tough one to crack, because their attitude is sometimes not the best towards this kind of thing. You have the challenge there. You have the challenge that you don't have alcohol, you don't have the structure of the alcohol in the drinks to actually hold it up and really work with it. And that, to me, is something that I understand from a sommelier point of view, from somebody who cares about pairings, all that kind of stuff. But you've also got to care about your customers. You've got to remember first and foremost that this is the leisure and hospitality industry. And the minute you forget that hospitality aspect, and the minute that you forget that not everybody drinks, and to actually offer them respectful choices about of food and drink around their choices, that's when you remember that you're in the hospitality industry.
For people who might just have started drinking non-alcoholic beer, who might not have had alcoholic beer even before they changed their drinking, where would you recommend for people to start when they're thinking about pairing beer and food together?
You're always looking at matching strength with strength. So strength flavour with strength flavour. So you wouldn't, for example, I wouldn't say to you, have a little light goat's cheese with a black IPA. The black IPA would stamp all over it. I also equally wouldn't say, have a black IPA with something that's incredibly deep and rich and insane and you know doesn't and particularly spicy. That won't work either. You need to understand where your levels of intensity are. Start with something that you like the look of. If you like fruit and you like raspberries, go for the raspberry gosa. If you like coffee, go for the black IPA. If you quite like the smell of a lager, go with your gut feeling. Don't feel overwhelmed, because at the end of the day, this is your hard-earned money. And you should spend it how you damn well please.
I'm here with my other co-founder, Yussi Tolvi. And those of you who don't know Yussi, he's our behavioural economist in Club Soda. What does being a behavioural economist mean, Yussi?
I guess it means that I've got a degree in economics and I like to think about behaviour.
Oh, shouldn't it sound a bit more glamorous than that?
Yeah, it Don't tell anyone.
But what it does mean is that you've been looking a lot over the last 5 years at Club Soda members' behaviour and what works for people in terms of changing their drinking. And what I thought would be really useful to discuss right now is how people should set goals around changing their drinking. Because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people listening will be setting, I want to cut down or I want to go alcohol-free in the new year. And then that's it. They haven't done much more than that. What do you think people should be doing when they set their New Year's resolutions?
Well, I think the first thing to be mindful about is not to make too many resolutions, because some people decide that, okay, I'm going to quit drinking, start dieting, start exercise, start flossing my teeth and all sorts of things, and that's just too much for anyone. So start small, maybe one resolution.
And so if that one resolution's about drinking, because as you can imagine, that it gets easier to floss your teeth if you actually aren't hungover and that you remember to do it. So maybe if, and I'm assuming here that people's overarching goal will be to either cut down or go alcohol free, how should you go about setting that goal? Because, I mean, half the population must have that goal, right?
Yeah, I think millions of people will be doing a dry January or something similar. So that's a quite a popular one. And it's also a really good time to give up drinking, because it's like gives you a month's worth of cover, because almost everyone will be not drinking. So it's easier to just go with the flow.
But should you just set an overarching, I'm going to give up drinking, or what makes that likely to succeed?
If you have decided to give up completely, then that's a simple goal. And then you just need to work on your, how do you achieve that goal? But if you've decided to moderate, then you'll have to make much more plans and think about it. So, for example, what does moderation mean for you? Do you want to drink on a few days or less every day, or what do you want to do? And you may still want to start with a month off or even a few months off.
Yeah, I often find that people who want to moderate take getting a good month under their belt and seeing what a month feels like, and having got through most of the triggers that you might expect, then they can begin to think about what moderation might mean for them after that break.
Yeah, and we always say that taking some time off is really good for everyone, whatever your ultimate goal is.
Yeah, I guess it's not going to do you any harm, right?
Probably not.
And what probably do you mean, probably not? Taking time off drinking, how can it do you harm?
Hey, behavioural economist here.
Oh, God.
You have to be careful in what you say.
I want to do the most amazing, thought-provoking and inspiring talks, and then UC brings it down to facts.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, and on the other hand, and on the third hand as well.
Okay. You know, you can see my challenge here at Club Soda, can't you? The other thing that we talk a lot about in our book is about creating the life that you want. Mm. And I found that people who think about why they want to change their drinking habits tend to be able to focus on that rather than just that headline. Because the headline is actually meaningless in some ways. It's who you want to be that's the important thing. Does that make a difference?
Setting the intention, which is, I think, a sort of a, almost like a higher level ambition, that you, this is the life I want to lead and this is how I want to live my life. And not drinking or drinking less is a big part of that.
I think so. There are people in Club Soda who's changing drinking goals because, you know, they want to stop drunk texting exes or being embarrassing or not have pictures on social media. But there are others who say they want to be better grandparents. They do want to get fitter. And that's a really good motivational goal. It's not just about changing the drinking, but about becoming a fitter person. Yeah. So you might want to think about those things that you want to achieve. It might be about saving money, for example.
Yeah, and I mean, we use the WHOOP methodology a lot, which you're very familiar with. So you've got a wish and an objective and an outcome and obstacles and a plan, which is a good way of going about it. I think there was an extra O there.
Yeah, you did put in an extra O. We actually go through that in a slightly different way in the booklet, in which we talk about intention and then we talk about planning for that intention and then planning for those things that you think might trigger you along the way and those things that will come and knock you off course. Yeah. And particularly if you are looking to moderate, there will be things that knock you off course, because alcohol begins to lessen your resolve the more of it you drink. So, of course, you need to be really clear and concise in your plans if you're going to moderate.
Yeah, and with whatever your goal is, like, it's really good to be more specific about your goals. Being a better parent, like, what does that mean exactly? Are you going to spend more time with your children? How much and when? And what exactly will you be doing? Because it's really easy to say that, oh, I'll do more of this and more of that, but you have to be very clear.
The other thing that I often find is a bit of a challenge, which, of course, is once you change your drinking And once you're doing stuff in January, you actually have more time and you want to be able to distract yourself. And lots of the things that we talk about distracting yourself are things like, you know, doing some exercise, maybe doing some really nice healthy cooking and all of that sort of stuff. So they are the stuff of other New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. What do you do about that? Because, you know, these are really good ways to distract yourself and to achieve your goal around changing your drinking. But if they become big New Year's resolutions in their own right as well, that could throw you off course, right?
Yeah, they can do. But people talk about keystone habits, which is like good habits that will help you achieve your other goals. So like exercise is a really good one, because the more exercise you do, you'll feel better and you'll probably find it easier to give up drinking as well.
So it's to support you achieving that drinking goal, but your drinking goal is the number one. And these aren't, you don't have two number ones, getting fit and change your drinking. The fitness is a way and a tool to help you change your number one goal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good goal in its own right, but it can also help you and support with your other goals.
Because also the other problem is if people do things like, right, that's it, I'm going to eat no sugar in January and give up drinking. And then if they eat some sweets, which, by the way, you're bound to do if you're changing your drinking habits because your sweet cravings go up. Then if you fail on that, then what you do is you hit the fuck it button.
Yeah, and the temptation is to then say, okay, that's it, everything's done, I'm not going to do anything anymore, which is a big risk. So in all of this stuff, you have to be really gentle with yourself.
And kind to yourself.
It's really hard to change your habits, yeah. Take it easy. And if you do slip or you don't achieve your goals, then take a step back and think, okay, what went wrong? What can I do differently? How do I go on from here?
Yeah, and don't make your changing eating sugar goal so difficult that you break both goals. Yeah. You may want some sugar if you're changing your drinking in January, and you should just let yourself do it. You can definitely deal with the sugar later. I am testament to that sometimes, maybe not all the time.
And if you're minded in the business way, then I find the SMART is a good way of thinking about your goals. So you'd want your goals to be SMART. So S for
specific.
Specific. Well done.
He'd forgotten that.
I can never remember these. Be clear about your goals, what they are.
Measurable.
Exactly. Measurable, yeah. So you can measure them, not just saying, I'll be better. What does that mean? I will be doing this and this thing in this way. A.
Is achievable.
Achievable, yeah. Is it actually realistic? Can you do it?
That's the R.
That's the R.
And T is time bound, is it not?
Time bound, yeah. Or timely. So you'll have some sort of time scales that, okay, I will not drink in January. And then you'll have 31 days to see how it goes. And then after January, you can decide about February.
So at the end of all of this, what I'm hearing from you is definitely set a New Year's resolution about changing your drinking. But have a little think about why you want to do it and the type of person you want to be as a result of changing your drinking habits. Do think about other things like health and fitness, but see them as supporting your overall goal on changing your drinking. Because the last thing you want to do is hit the fuck it button if at some point you think you failed on the eating sugar and therefore you fail on everything and you're a complete failure. It's that going for perfection that is actually gets in the way of us achieving our goals. So be kind to yourself.
Yes.
I think that was the final bit, which I like. Be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent interview with Yeesi there, a fellow co-founder, along with Laura. And who's the other one?
Drew, who you heard last episode on the book.
Ah, the man in the van with the authoring plan.
Ooh. Where did that come from?
You can have that for nothing. On that bombshell.
This is it. This is the end of 2019. This is our second episode. And there's a third episode to come in January.
Excellent. Thank you, as always. You can find the next podcast on the Club Soda blog, which is joinclubsoda.com. And soon it will be on Acast and Apple as well. Happy New Year. And as reflected there from Yeesi and Laura, be compassionate to yourself.
Oh, we should have clinked some glasses. We're so bad.
We need better sound effects. Cheers, Laura.
Cheers.
This was mixed and produced in the UK by We Make Podcasts. For more information, go to wemakepodcasts.uk.